This is not what we want, man.
Bahama Soul Club with Afro Shigida. Well, I figured we might as well cap off the week with a little dancing. That's good dancing music. And, you know, whatever you can wiggle, you wiggle. And have a good time and lift your spirits. And let's get on with the day. It's Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're talking about the things that you want to talk about. This is the whole point of Free Your Mind Friday. You have some issues or subject matters that you would like to touch on, and you bring them to our attention in your own unique way. And you do that by calling 888-874-4888. Before we go one step further, I just want to say thank you so much for supporting the 2 days that we did our own voluntary mini fundraising drive. I'm going to be learning shortly how it actually turned out when everything is tallied. But I do know that in the end, it is all about you, and you supported this effort. It was to indicate that we are aware, you know, we don't have to wait until we're asked to do something. We see the opportunity is at hand, and we just get to the work. That's the important thing. We get to the work, we do the work, and we assist the station in being financially ready to undertake its expansion, pursuing new audiences, upgrading technical capability. That takes money. Whenever you talk about growth, it means money. And we don't have to wait until the moment to then go and hustle up some money. What we do is we prepare every little bit you get, you put into the pot, and then you know that by the time you're ready to do your projects, you have some financing to carry you through. So thank you so much for your support. I really do appreciate it. And you, in turn, will appreciate the fact that you're getting products that will help you accomplish the number one thing, which is to boost your immune system. I can't say that enough. Your immune system is critical, and you have to take care of it. Be kind to yourself and give yourself, your immune system, some special attention. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We get things started today on Lead Stories. Ma'at, you starting us off.
Yes. Greetings to the beloved family. For this Free Your Mind Friday, I want to go back to you were looking to get more calls in, but I didn't get in my solutions. I think it was a Thursday when you were saying, what do we do about the idiot in the White House? And the sister, I can't remember her name, but she was an early caller. I think it might have been the day before. And she, oh, no, it was the same day. And she basically was talking about something that's become obvious. So the president, him or herself, doesn't have to really go through a background and security check, which is very interesting because we remember the scandal and controversy around Jared Kushner and other people qualifying for the security check. And Trump himself, if he were other than the president, he would fail with flying colors the security check. So I think that if you recall the sister making the point about setting up a system through the grassroots, she suggested, so that you could put someone in office that qualified in the respects that the people under him have to. I also want, in terms of solutions, Utrice and family, I think that the way that the elections go down in this country, and you can kind of understand why some people just don't want to deal with it, it's all based on money. So when you have the Kochs and the Mercers in the particular case of promoting and putting in Trump, you know, you're gonna, that's always gonna be a bad negative result when, you know, the billionaires who don't have any concerns about health care for the people or labor rights or you know, number of things, what Gary was just talking about, things being totally upside down and backwards, the police being a standing army and military, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the second point. And the other point is, it's a winner-take-all system. So some countries and voting systems have a way where it's you know, I think it's called, I forget, is it proportional voting? But in other words, it's not winner-take-all, so your choices are ranked and you get some say, and it might have to do with how we could have more of a, within the Constitution, I guess, a parliamentary type system where people's voices, even if they're in the minority, get to be heard. And that's what I have to share.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you know,
you.
I marvel. I just took myself out of the mess because I could not cope with the hypocrisy. I cannot cope with the fact that when it comes down to it, people talk about change, but they're not interested in making it. They don't want change. They talk about it. The Democratic Party and other parties that have come along, they talk about it. There is very little evidence that they have mobilized behind the ideas that they espouse. So that is the frustration as well. It's still the fact that the people have to do all of the heavy lifting. And I'm not a proponent of that. The people have their part to play. And it seems to me that the record shows that they play their part to the best of their ability. But the structure on all sides, whether it is a Democrats or Republicans or some other dominant party, independent party, workers' party, whatever it is, they just talk. They just talk. And that induces in the electorate the same attitude. We just talk. We're not serious about a thing. If we really want change, we would have had it by now. We would have had a plan by now. We would have had a direction, and we would have had something approximating a reasonably fair voting system. We don't have it. It's not going to happen anytime soon. And we should reconcile ourselves to that. We have to find some way of coping. Mine was, I'm not part of this thing. I came to that conclusion, as I've shared with you, in the voting booth. It was a stick-up, as far as I was concerned, in the voting booth. I'm not going to be part of a stick-up where I'm the one being stuck up. No, I don't want it. So we will know when people are serious. We will know that when they're ready to engage fully in transforming the system that they criticize so much, yeah, well then I'll reconsider my options. But until then, I have come to the conclusion that people are just joking for the most part. They're just talking, as James Brown, the great philosopher, said, talking loud and saying nothing. Nobody has really stepped out there in a definitive way, whether as an individual or an organization or a party, and put forward ideas for structural change. We just talk about it. And it's depressing, really, because we have such good minds. We have a lot of brilliant people. And it is incomprehensible to me that a country so sophisticated, so intellectually sophisticated, chooses to operate in such a rudimentary, primitive political way. Thanks for your call. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air. What's you talking about today?
Well, in my effort, hello, wonderful Eucharist, in my effort to create an environmentally safe world, I'd like to tell you and your vast audience about solar electric rechargeable batteries. It turns out that billions of batteries are thrown into the landfill each year, and as the battery casings erode and corrode, chemicals leach into the soil and make their way into our water supply. Chemicals inside batteries include cadmium, lead, mercury, nickel, and lithium. Cadmium and nickel are known human carcinogens. Lead has been linked to birth defects and neurological damage, and mercury is a known toxic. So the idea is to make rechargeable batteries that can be recharged from the sun. And the rechargeable batteries can have a solar electric surface printed directly on the battery's casing. And now they make a photovoltaic ink. Photovoltaic means light to electricity. Photo, that's light, and volt is electricity, photovoltaic ink. And we can spray it or jet, we can print it or jet spray it onto the battery's outer casing. And then you can just, say, take the batteries out of your flashlights or toys or whatever and put them right up on the windowsill and recharge them from sunlight directly. And there could be a power strip on the battery that you can take the battery and touch the power strip, and it'll tell you if the battery's charged or not. And then so that way we know the batteries are charged. Because right now, a lot of batteries are recharged. People plug them in, put them in their recharger and plug them into the wall. And it so happens that the grid, our electric grid, is mostly fossil fuel driven. So basically, people's rechargeable batteries, even though they think that, you know, rechargeable, they're sort of being environmentally sound, it's actually fossil fuel driven. So we're just powering our batteries off of fossil fuels. So this way, we can power our batteries directly off the sunlight, and you wouldn't even need, a lot of rechargeable batteries have solar rechargers. But this way, the solar material, the surface of the battery is like a solar panel. So you just put the batteries up in your window on the windowsill, and they're just recharged directly from the sunlight. And also, You know, they make these laptop computers like Apple and all that, and they have these big surfaces on the top. And I don't see why they don't put a photovoltaic surface on the laptop so that the laptop is actually recharging its own batteries. So that's one way I think that we could really be more environmentally friendly by charging our batteries right off the sun. And so solar electric batteries would be the way to go. And that's what I'd like to see. So to avoid billions of batteries being thrown into our landfills and causing all sorts of pollution and damage to our environment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good idea. Very good idea. Marcus from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Thank you, Ms. Leeds. I've listened to your program for several years now, always with pleasure and often with profit. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have studied on the matters you all are discussing for a great many years. And number one, the problem is there is not now, nor has there ever been, a left in the United States. Much of the world now, and certainly most of the United States, is openly fascist. They espouse values based on power, exclusion. We have to face this. Historically, the left has suffered from not realizing two basic truths about the history of revolutions and how societies change. Number one, revolutions are started by smart people, but they're always finished by smarter ones. So whatever system you start can be co-opted by people who control the reins of power, rephrased and turned into what power wants. The second delusion is that you can transform society without transforming yourself. If you are dependent on a computer, regardless of your meaningless range of politics, you are dependent on the corporate system. If you drive an automobile, you're dependent. If you're paying insurance companies and you're in hock to any degree with a bank, you're done. They've got you. Now, this is the problem. As you said earlier, there are aspects of this that you don't like. But the myth that people can somehow commandeer the government and its mechanisms, which is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the rich, and you can use it for your own ends, is simply false. You have to set up an alternative way of organizing society that will allow you to drop out of their system of control. Otherwise, you're just kidding yourself. You're just kidding yourself. Politics is simply the game that makes you believe the delusion that the system is amenable to what people who are not rich want. Your problem is not a political one. Your problem is that no matter what system you set up, and this is the history, as long as people can amass enough wealth and organize with other people who have amassed great wealth, they can turn your system into a joke, no matter how many people condone it or take part in it or approve of it. This is the problem. One of the great financiers in the robber baron era stated the problem clearly. He said, I can hire one half of the working class to kill the other half. That's the problem. The single problem that all the other things you discuss, racism, the environment, it all stems from this. As long as a population is so venal that it can be purchased, there's nothing you can do. Nothing.
Well, you raise a very, very profound point, and I agree with you in large measure. That's exactly what I've been saying. I don't see how we make sense when, on the one hand, we criticize the system, and then on the other hand, we participate, and it makes no sense to me. So I'm waiting to see when there would be a gathering of momentum and careful and logical planning. It doesn't have to be grandiose. It doesn't have to wait till everybody's on board. But we certainly could start by severing ties in strategic areas with the system. It is, in fact, a control system. So why are we continuing to participate in it? You have a great point. Thanks so much for calling in. Jeff from New Jersey, what have you to say?
Oh, I got a lot to say today. How's everything? Hope everything's fine.
So organize your thoughts and give us one big punch.
One big punch. Well, your previous two callers really hit on it. That is to not, and I think what you're implying is in this system, we can participate or not participate. If we don't participate, we're going to have to make some sacrifices. But the main thing is, it's just like you, like this last caller just said, if you can purchase half of the population or a good part of the population to destroy the other half of the population, you won't have any, there'll be no solution. So the answer is in a Stevie Wonder song. Love is in need of love today, which means that no matter what you do, if you want to participate or not participate, teach your children to love humanity. Teach your neighbor to love humanity. Show love. Be love. Because that's the only thing that's going to save us. Because if we continue to hate each other over an ideology or an idea, if we continue to buy into the propaganda of a party or a system and say, you know, point the finger at the other person is to blame, and all anybody wants to do is live and be happy. That's all anybody wants to do. Even the most miserable of people want to live and be happy. They're only miserable because they can't do that. So now, if we can, what we really need to do is just show love. And when we show love, police officers won't shoot individuals. When we show love, we won't have the wars that we have going on. When we show love, we won't have the injustices going on in court. We won't have injustices going on in such and such area. Now, those who don't want to show love will be shown out. And when we can show, and when we can show them out, my mother's called, when we can show them out, then we can make distinction on who is with who. And then when we get the people who are showing love, we can create another system.
Okay.
That's what I got to say.
Well, something to consider. Thank you so much. Jafonza, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Jafonza of Ohio, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm calling
okay.
In regard to positive images. I got tired of hearing negativities about our people, basically from our own people. It's more hurtful. So I came up with organization, LLC, African Ancestry One. My shield and my staff comfort me. And then I came up with African Descendant International. My plan is to have a store. Our mission is to provide our customer value, quality products with positive images. We honor customers with dignity and respect. I came up with the logo, African Descendant, the signature, meaning positive images of African descendants. Our signature brand represent people of color, black for our people, blood for, red for the blood we shed, green for the earth. We're in about 115 different countries. And the Golden Crescent is where the enrichment of knowledge brings wealth. I came up with the middle line.
Okay, you're describing, this is a system, a commercial endeavor that you're undertaking, and you're
yes.
giving us an idea of the rationale for it?
Yes.
Okay.
The classical brand is the concept.
How will this change the world?
I will, as I finish, black concept, positive purpose. We speak
for
ourselves.
But you see, what I'm saying is that what you're telling us is what, hold on. You don't need to spell out to us what it is you're doing. Whatever it is you're doing, we assume that you know what you're doing. I'm asking the question, with all of these things that you have invested a lot of time and effort in assembling as a narrative to undergird the philosophy of your business, what will that business be?
I have my plan is for apparel, which I did develop once when my uncle died, left a little change, and I used it and made a shirt. And the shirt's clothing line, well, I read the book Ralph Lauren and understood how he came up with the concept of products. But the very last one I wanted to tell you about, it was about children, because our children don't recognize a lot of times why they're called African or African descendants or African American. And I did a logo also for children called
Zuba. Wait. You're telling us what you did. I am saying to you, I am assuming that whatever it is you did is confluent with your concept of how you're running or intend to run your business. I'm more interested in your business concept. What is your business concept?
My business concept is to have a store and online sales for products, and we emphasize, as I said, positive images. In wearing these, this will make a person or our people feel, say, I don't like to use certain words, but I would say more proud and respected of who they are, instead of wearing Ralph Lauren and Nike and stuff like that. This is a history and culture. I'm trying to get them to understand the history and culture.
I'm trying to get you to understand the essentials of business. Have you studied a business model that works, that is kind of close to what it is you propose to do and have begun to do?
Well, when you say a business model, there's
yes.
several businesses, and they're excluding us, period, with all the products that they sell and our people continually buy. And
okay, but I understand that. We're on two different levels. I'm asking you, do you at this point understand the elements of business, especially since you're coming into a competitive field, and you would need a structure that reasonably assures that you have a decent chance of survival? I'm asking, what is your business model?
The model is to advertise, market, and show positive purposes through clothing accessories.
Okay, but you're not telling me about the uniqueness of your business model. What is the business model that you will be following? You see, this is a very important point where we put the cart before the horse. Your idea would be a good idea at any time that you choose to implement it. But when you enter the fray of the business world, there are many factors that you have absolutely no control over that will destroy you. And I'm not trying to beat you down or discourage you. I'm saying the one thing that I have found that we don't do is devote enough time to studying business models that have worked and that do work. So that apart from the philosophy of your business, you seem to have a good handle on that, what is the business of your business so that you can feel reasonably assured that as you enter this world, a highly competitive world, you have a reasonably good chance of making it, making profit, which is very important. So have you studied business models that you think you are similar, yours will be similar to, or business models that have succeeded in this viciously competitive marketplace so that you know what to avoid and you know where you have an advantage?
Well, I also study that, and I've also studied other businesses that have been successful for over decades. But to say precisely how am I marketing or how am I putting my product in the same marketplace as them, then no, I haven't been that precise. However, I do know is that we need to desegregate the dollar and bring it back to our African presence people. So
I understand that. I'm not arguing your philosophy. It is a solid philosophy. It's the philosophy of Marcus Garvey and so many of Madam C.J. Walker and so many other people who have been spectacularly successful and who have developed business models that work. For every business, there is a business model. And you have a good idea, but that is not all that you need. You need to solidly engage with a business model, test it, talk to people about it who are in business, get their reactions as to where the strengths of your business, even if it's in the formative stages, where you have strength in your business, but where you have weaknesses. I'm not discussing the idea. You could market anything if you have done the homework. And I'm not sure that I'm getting from you that you have paid or still are paying attention to the model of your business. So that from the word go, you understand what you are up against in terms of competition. You understand what you would need to survive, and you understand how you will be maneuvering in a very vicious competitive world. I'm a little bit scared for you that is the work that you need to do. All the other things that you have said so far sound good. You know, wanting to engage in a kind of commerce where it is compatible with the values that we have. This is ideal. Great. But how many businesses, such as the one that you envision, how many have tried and have failed? Or how many have tried and have achieved success? What are they doing? What have they done so that you can prevail? The one thing that you don't need is to, repeat other people's failed mechanisms in business. You don't need it. You need to succeed. And I am urging you to get serious about studying business models that are close enough or similar to what you're trying to do. Bigger people, I mean, with lots of money, Russell Simmons had a clothing line, Def Jam, and, people have clothing lines all the time. But it is the fact that they have money that would help them bide time in a competitive world. Many of them did not survive, but they understood from the beginning what they were up against and took a gamble. I don't need you to take a gamble. I want you to be solid with your business concept and don't worry to rush to make it happen. Take your time, go to the library, do the research, talk to people, and find out which business model you are going to follow, because that is going to determine whether you succeed or not. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand exactly, but they're all European companies. They're not black companies with positive products. I understand what you're saying, business concept.
Even so, here's the thing. If they're European companies, you still need to study them because they're still following, they're still participating in a highly competitive market, and you need to know how that market works. You have to study the market, and you have to build your strategy. You have to understand what it is you're in for. Don't go by who is white or who is black or who is Asian or whatever. Every business type has a business model. And I find that when I talk with entrepreneurs, so people seeking to be entrepreneurs, they have no clue. They think the idea is going to work. That is not enough. You have to know what business model you are following, what it is that you are going to be doing every single day to assure a sale, capture sales, capture new customers. You have to learn the business of business. All of your other ideas and the philosophy and so forth that drives it, that's fine. But the central issue to me, listening to you today, is that you need to invest some time. Any time you choose to start your business is fine. But start the right way. Start the right way knowing the business of your business. And you would avoid a whole lot of sorrow and mistakes. I would love that you would succeed. But you have to approach this thing scientifically, not emotionally. Scientifically. Okay, so invest in that process and prepare yourself to understand the business of your business before you open up your business. And you would be a force to reckon with because people would understand right away, you know, you have a good handle on this. Right now it sounds more conceptual than implementable. You have a good idea, but is it possible to start it at this time? What does your business model look like? Where are you getting your capital? When would you reach the break-even point in your business? Where is your market? Where are you sourcing your products? What does it take to produce a garment, the cost? If you're making culturally appropriate pants, for example, what would each unit cost? Based on what? Where are you sourcing material? These are the kinds of questions that I would ask you. And I would expect you to know the answers because it would tell me you know your business. And you're starting on the right foot. You're not going to be slammed in the face, by sudden and unexpected costs or developments in your business world. Because when you do the research, you're prepared. I wish you the very, very best of luck. But luck is not the only thing you need. You need science. You need to get into the heart of what a business such as the one you conceive, how that business actually works. What kind of machinery is needed? How many people would it take to run your business and produce an average of, say, 10 garments a day? Where will you be selling? At what rate will you be selling? Are you selling as, you know, to consumers? Are you selling to major distributors? These are things that you know, are you going with 100% cotton? Are you going with cotton blends? You know, you have to think about these things. The nitty-gritty is where battles are won and lost. I don't want you to lose. Thanks so much for calling in, and I hope this was helpful to you. Ephraim Edgewater, you're on the air.
Junior Treese.
Hello.
Hope everybody's doing well today.
Thank you. It's a good thought. Thanks so much. So what are we going to be hearing about from you today?
Well, no gloom and doom stuff. I'm trying to give a few helpful hints for people that live in hurricane zones and, you know, where power goes out. Since we're at the peak of hurricane season and we've seen what just happened in North Carolina, I feel so sorry for those people. Down here in Florida, Hurricane Matthew, I wasn't prepared for. That was 2 years ago. And when the power went out, I went running to the store to get ice and stuff, and I couldn't find any because it was all sold out already. So, you know, you have to be prepared. And when they give you, like, a warning of a few days, you get your car filled up with gas right away, and you try not to drive around too much and keep that in case you got to, you know, leave. And all right, so with the refrigerator going out when the power goes out, instead of running to the store for ice, you buy 6 gallons of spring water. You know, the bottles that are like the cylinder-shaped bottles and they're clear, heavy-duty plastic? You put 6 of them in the freezer and let them freeze up rock solid. That's like having 6 big bags of ice in your freezer now. So then when the right side of the refrigerator starts to lose its coolness, you transfer everything into the left side, the freezer side, and that'll stay cool for 5 or 6 days. That's what I found last year with Hurricane Irma. When the power was out for 6 days, I was able to have a cold refrigerator for 6 days, just having those bottles of frozen gallons of water in there. Then you don't have to worry about the ice melting and being all over the place because the water's in the bottle, and you could even use the water if you want. I just keep them in there now. Don't forget, I'm by myself. If I was with another person, it would still work out okay. But when you're dealing with bigger families, then I guess people have to go the generator way. I don't, even though I could afford a generator, I don't enjoy hearing the noise of generators going for 5 or 6 days, 24/7, all around me. My neighbors have generators going 24/7, using up a lot of gasoline and making a lot of noise pollution. So I would prefer not having a generator. So that solves the refrigerator for 5 or 6 days. Now for lighting, instead of going with flashlights and batteries and candles where you got to worry about you could burn your house down with candles, you buy yourself 10 solar lights. You can get them in Walgreens, a store like that, sometimes $3 a piece or something. You keep them out in the sun, and I usually keep them outside when there's power. And when the power goes out, I bring them inside, and they light up my whole house for the whole night, and I don't have to worry about candles and flashlights and batteries. So that clears up the lighting problem. And then in the morning, I put them back out in the sun, and they get charged up again. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is I invested a few dollars in a wind-up solar-powered radio. and you got the weather band on there, AM, FM. It's got lights on it like a flashlight, and it's got a big solar panel on the back, and you leave it out in the sun, and you got power for the whole day on with the radio. If it's cloudy or raining, then you can use the crank, and you crank it up for 5 minutes, and that'll be good for like an hour. It's a little harder with the cranking, but with the solar panel, I haven't had to do any cranking because it's so sunny down here, you get plenty of energy from the sun. So those are three things that I think could help people. It helped me out a lot from the hurricane from last year, and I learned a lot from the one before that. And that's those are my three helpful hints, Eutrice.
I hope they'll help people out. For surviving hurricanes and storms. Thank you so much.
And
you have some innovative ideas there.
All right, Eutrice, don't forget. Impeach 45. That was Ross Perot imitating Miss Waters. Impeach 45. Impeach 45. Don't she sound like Ross Perot? That's what she reminded me of when she says that. Ross Perot.
Well, let's see how far they could take it to reality. It's one thing to say it, as I always say, but it's another thing to get it done. By the time you start talking about Impeach 45, I should be able to get from you a working copy of the articles of impeachment. You don't just get up there and start flapping your lips. If you're serious,
right,
you would be prepared. This is what you'd be working on. Only one congressman so far, member of Congress, has done that, and that is Congressman Al Green of Texas. He did it twice, produced two different sets of articles of impeachment. So he's not just talking. And whether people agree with his positions or not, what impresses me is he sat down and wrote articles, what he believes to be articles of impeachment that should be called against the president. It means that you're not just talking loud and saying nothing. It means that you're serious. Thanks a lot, E. Great talking with you, and I'm glad that you called in. 888-874-4888. We have quite a few minutes left, and we can make use of them. You know, the whole point, I want to go back to Chifunza and the business of doing business. I happen to love business. I grew up in a business family. And it wasn't because my father and my mother were, you know, they went to college and got big time degrees. They just used their heads and they came up with ideas that they thought would work. But times have changed. And you can't, especially when you factor in your age bracket, you can't take chances as a first time business owner. You have to be reasonably sure that you are making sensible moves that wouldn't wipe you out and that would take into consideration your age, your capacity to do things, your competition and would-be competition, and the resources that would be available to you to start out a business, not screaming and scratching for, you know, basic funds, but that you're well prepared, you're financed in order to enough to make it through your first year. These are the scientific things that you have to do. A business is viable at any time. You can launch a business at any time, but you have to be ready. And that's my constant concern, that we're not ready. We are in love with the idea of it. But if I were to ask you for a business plan, most people would not be able to produce one. And you can't. You just can't. Even if you're running a lemonade stand, you have to have an understanding of your business before you go into business, you see? And this is where so many good ideas die. We have people with good ideas, but they're not doing the work. They're not doing the homework. They're not studying the very thing that they're hoping to rely on in later years to sustain them. And that is the biggest danger. And I see it a lot in our community, people just having an idea and thinking that that's all you need, and you need a little bit of muscle, and you need some faith, and you're good to go. Nope. It doesn't work like that. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Yatrice, and greetings to your audience. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in.
Yes,
what's your contribution today?
Well, first, I want to thank you for that business lesson that you shared. Those were thoughts that I hadn't thought about before. I appreciate you sharing, taking the time and caring enough to share that with the entrepreneur to be, what have you. Thank you for that. My question is regarding Amos Wilson's book, Blueprint for Black Power.
Yes.
Only this year, I finally broke down and budgeted that month. I bought the book. And
good for you. It's about 10 books in one, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. 900-page treatise is what it says on the back. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard you, I think that you personally knew Dr. Wilson. Is that correct?
And, yes.
Yes, ma'am. And have you yourself read this book, Blueprint
yes.
for Black Power? Okay. What do you recommend reading the entire book, which is something I want to do, but is there a certain chapter that you found that you liked best, or what do you think Dr. Wilson wanted people to walk away with after reading this book? It looks like, after reading
it is not a fast read. It wasn't designed to be a fast read.
Yes, ma'am.
It was designed to be a text that for generations would serve as a basis of study for a person or a family or a community. He lays it all out, all these different aspects that we normally do not consider. He is writing in all of his work with a profound understanding of the psychosis of psychology, if I could put it that way, and introducing people to the idea that they had psychological groundings all along that would have advanced them and protected them and furthered their ambitions and helped them live a more healthy, psychologically healthy life in their community. A healthy life, but he deals with the pathology of white supremacy. And that in itself is a study that we don't give very much credence to. We just say, we come up with a rather simplistic interpretation of the relationship between blacks and whites, you could say, in our society, when that is not really it's a very deep scientific equation, and we miss it almost all the time. He breaks it down.
Okay.
And he breaks it down to teach us how in different realms we are at a disadvantage simply because we don't understand ourselves, nor do we understand our enemies. So it is, this whole thing, for example, one of his books is Black on Black Violence. Right there is where he starts to debunk the whole idea that it is a phenomenon so unique to the black community. When, in fact, if you look at the statistics, you find out the people who are committing crimes against Lithuanians would tend to be other Lithuanians. So that this idea of black on black violence is not unique to blacks. Why has it been made unique to blacks? There's a political reason, there's a social reason, and there is a psychological reason, all having to do with dominance of the white culture. And to even get us, afflicted people, to buy into these myths. I just saw an article, somebody talking about the rate of black-on-black crime. Well,
yes.
Chinese are killing Chinese. Albanians are killing Albanians.
Yes, ma'am. I believe even in Aretha Franklin's eulogy, Reverend Jasper Williams used that term, black-on-black crime or black-on-black violence or something to that effect. But yes, his book is called Black-on-Black Violence, The Psychodynamics of Black Self-Annihilation in Service of White Domination.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that statement, just the title of the book, elevates and deepens at the same time an understanding of the dynamic we need to appreciate to really understand this, a casual phrase like black-on-black crime. What is that? And how is it different from, as I said, Albanian on Albanian crime?
Correct. Correct.
So he, to me, is an incredible mind.
Mm-hmm.
And people ought to read all of his books.
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
They go into every phase of life that is just so critical in our community. He talks about raising children, well-adjusted children. It talks about the finely tuned system of oppression. We don't understand it that way, but that's what it is. It's not called racism. It's a scientific system of oppression. If we just change our minds about that, we'd be in good shape.
Call it what it is.
We have to read and study. And as I said, we many times have said, we're the only oppressed people who don't need anything more. We have a lot already available to help us get out of our situation and understand the promise that we have built in. Thanks, Leona, for your call. Thank you all for your calls. You know, I am so proud of the intellectual value that we get here on Free Your Mind Friday, and I hope we improve on it and keep it going. Have yourselves a great weekend. Surround yourselves with people who are positive influences in your life, and be happy. And we'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye. Everywhere. She dag there now. She dag everywhere. She body, she left foot.